Hello? I'm sorry. That was just a weird way to start off.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome. We are doing an episode of Ray's Music Reviews, and we are joined by KP.
Hello. Something.
And Green Day Jared.
I literally cannot think of a Green Day quote off the top
American
of my head.
American Idiot Jared.
No, I don't want to be a mud hippie Jared. What did we listen to this week?
We listened to acoustic folk singer-songwriter emo... acoustic folk singer-songwriter emo-adjacent band Bright Eyes. I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning. This album was released in 2005. Bright Eyes, they actually released an album this year.
I know the guy Connor Oberst, am I saying his name right?
Yeah.
He's been active for like this entire time, even if Bright Eyes hasn't. Like, he had a band with Phoebe Bridgers, which is awesome.
Yeah, which you can tell that, like, Phoebe Bridgers takes a lot from this.
Oh yeah, like the indie folk emo adjacent.
Some of the songwriting too. She does have some influence from this, and
I'd say on the second half of this album is where she probably takes more of her songwriting.
Yeah.
Reference.
Bright Eyes they weren't the most mainstream of bands, but they always fit their niche, and they kind of always did it well and underground enough to the point where, like, these guys couldn't have been mainstream.
No.
They're too bleak. Is that the right phrase?
Bit of a bleak album in parts.
I remember one quote Dad said when we were first listening to this, and we were in the car. We were in some type of line to get some type of food. I don't remember what it was, but he said, "How long ago was this album made?" And I said, "Oh, 2005." And he said, "Is this guy still alive?" And I said, "Yeah." And Dad replied, "Well, he seems pretty depressed."
Yeah.
Which I feel like kind of describes this album in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, given that's the whole vibe he was going for, both. Like, in terms of describing cultural issues during that time period and, like, his personal issues. I mean, it's...
The cultural issues during that time period, would that be kind of why we wound up with emo, do we think?
I think this was a little before...
Precursor?
This is, like, proto-emo.
No, this isn't a precursor. This is 2005. This came out after American Idiot.
Yeah.
So Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge and Deja Nintendo and most of those big albums from that time. This kind of came out a bit after it. I'd say this is the elements of emo kind of blended into this, but not that emo. Not
I
2000s
get
emo. Like,
it's
Midwest American football, Sunny Day Real Estate style.
Yes.
Emo, not...
not any of those other bands.
Not American Idiot, not...
No, because again, it's not three folk emo.
Not Three Tears, like maybe Brand New, but that's about it. This is unique. Should we get into the first song?
Go for it.
At the bottom of everything. I like this song a lot, actually. I really like the opening speech he gives, like, at the start. Just
the story?
Yeah, the story.
About being on the plane?
Yeah, it's a very sad story.
I like the story, and I like the song. I hate the way he tells the story. Mostly because he starts off the very first second of audio on this album by slurping his drink. The audio during the story, it sets me on edge, so I can't listen to it. I had to skip past it. The way he slurps, and then he drinks again, and the way he pronounces, and
that's kind of the point, isn't it, though?
It's bad audio, though. Like, I get the whole vibe of, like, oh, I'm seeing this guy in a dive bar somewhere, and he's telling a story before he does a song. It takes me to that place, but again, oh my god, the slurp. Literally, the first second of audio is a slurp on this album, and I'm just like, oh.
You don't like ASMR?
No, that's the opposite of ASMR. It's terrible. But I like the song. I've actually heard the song before. When I listened to this, I was like, oh, they're these guys. Because I guess I've listened to enough emo-adjacent music
my song I've heard was First Day of My Life. That was my song that I heard before this. Yes,
because that's evidently their most famous song. And I did recognize that one as well. I feel like there was another song, but I don't remember off the top of my head that I recognized.
How do we feel about the closer?
Road to Joy? I like it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's kind of like the... When Connor screams, come on, boys, let's make some noise, and it's just kind of this really... Instead of, like, you expect it to be more organized than it is...
Yes.
I feel like it's a really good way to close this album.
I feel like thematically as well. Thematically, it's like a summary of a lot of what he was talking about on the album. Both him... even in the start where he's talking about the story, the whole woman reading a newspaper... or woman reading an article or whatever about some tragedy happening in the world. And in the closing of this album, he's talking about, I read the body count out of the paper, and now it's written all over my face. Again, that's a major through line, was just the tragedy going on in the world and mm-hmm. how that affects people personally.
Absolutely.
In addition to him talking about how he deals with his interpersonal problems with dating or whatever, and... talking about his parents a little bit too. That's a common theme through the album. It was good. It's a good thematic closer.
Correct.
Okay, just now that we're just now we've gotten through the first and last track, I think we should just kind of speedball. How did we feel about Connor's songwriting?
This is going to be a common theme for the rest of the album, but I like the second half of the album like considerably more. Everything after, I think, First Day of My Life, like that whole five block thing, that's my favorite chunk of the album. I like it way more than I like the first bit. I don't know what exactly shifts in the songwriting, but I can connect to it way more.
It's also not as emotionally overwhelming.
Yeah.
And you can, early in the record, you can feel hopeless. Yeah. You know, Lua is like, that's an incredibly sad substance abuse story, and it's so accurate the way he's describing how the abuse cycle can run whatever you're abused to, whereas you're looking forward to abusing yourself because you've trained yourself to be that way. And then when the day is through, when you're watching the sun come up and you don't want to be, or you've gone and visited that person that somehow you've managed to be, that you convinced yourself you should be around, and then they treat you poorly and you go away from that relationship, and then you like, why do I keep putting myself through this? Those style of things, that's a lot to take in. And he uses that story. He's a brilliant storyteller. You know, I mean, this is quite a collection of emotion and themes and personal stories in general, swooping stories as well.
Absolutely.
And it's why the singer-songwriter concept, it's why no matter how many great songwriters live, Dylan always gets brought up, right? Because being able to concisely give people a picture in their mind matters. You know what I mean? I remember, this is off topic, but I may have told this story before, but I remember Bob Seger is a Midwestern storyteller from his time period, right? Justin Hazing, but whatever. but I remember Prince, pre-1999, told his agent, he was like, I want to go see a Seger concert, because he kept noticing that guy's on the charts all the time. And he goes, and he sees all these people, like, screaming and hollering and having a good time and singing along. And Prince looks at the agent. He's like, I don't get it. And the manager agent guy's like, it's the stories, Prince. It's because I get it that you can go up there and out-sing him, and you can go up there and you can outplay him, and you can outplay every person on that stage, and your band is way better or way more talented.
Yes.
But those people can identify with the stories that you tell. Oh, absolutely. And so then 1999 comes out, and it's you know, I was dreaming when I wrote this. Sue me if I go too fast. Woke up, you know, that whole thing. All of a sudden, you can feel the stories. Little Red Corvette is a story about being in love with a woman. You know what I mean? And so, what he does is he's able to, and the neatness of the way it's told in the setting with the acoustic instruments and all that is also fantastic.
Oh
yeah. Right?
Oh, dude, I gotta give a shout out to the general sound of this album is really good.
Oh, just so
the,
good.
The indie folk is so, it's so good, and I think that lends to the storytelling aspect of it in a lot of ways.
And you can, if you don't watch yourself, you can roll your eyes at indie folk if you're not from a certain style. But man, it's good if you'll let it get into you. If you'll allow a banjo to get into you. If you'll allow the different ways they're telling you these stories to get into you. It's so impressive.
And again, I connected. Again, First Day of My Life was probably the song that hit me first. I'd being just like, oh, wow. Damn. Mm-hmm. And then Landlocked Blues came on. Landlocked Blues is my favorite song on this album.
Yeah.
I love that song. That song's really, really good. Because again, it's like a narrative arc over the story. It's him describing his situation in life. It's
right.
And situations that I can relate to.
Well, and the First Day of My Life leading into another traveling song almost feels like it's washing you clean.
Yes, yes. I think that's another part of why I like the second half is just, it feels like I'm moving forward from the
right First Day of
the
My
sadness of the first half.
Literally, you know, I'm being reborn from the pains I've just told you about, and then I kind of wash you clean, and then I give you the finish, and then yes. I sum it up at the end, which is, you know, if you're talking about how do you book an album, that's the way it should be done.
Ray, what was your favorite song?
My favorite song, First Day of My Life, is just kind of one of my favorite songs of any singer songwriter ever.
It's good.
Really, it's I think it's just because I've heard it. A lot more than I expected myself.
It's really sweet. It's sweet and it's sad, which I feel like it is such a good spot for this style of music to be in. Is the I wouldn't say bittersweet.
Kind of, and this isn't fair, but it's almost with First Day of My Life. Like there are two songs that I think of when I think of this specific genre, and that's First Day of My Life mm-hmm. and I Will Follow You Into the Dark by Death Cab for Cutie. And those are also, and that's also one of my favorite singer-songwriter songs, and they're both very sweet, but very sad. I think the Death Cab for Cutie one's a bit more sad, but this. Overall, it's just so well written. Just this whole album. It like when it wants to be sad, it's sad. But when it wants you to not be sad anymore, it just kind of works.
I feel yeah, absolutely.
I don't really know what else we could say. What else did you want to say? Oh, I also wanted to add that every time when I'm in the record store, I always look at this album and I always consider getting it. But I never did.
It's a good album.
It's still there, though. You can still get it. I do really like Train Underwater, too. But it is, again, the journeys into, like, this is a journey into a formerly deceased, a deceased friend, right?
One of two songs on the album.
Right. Those deep journeys into the struggle of getting through things are really interesting to me in general, you know, and I find that fascinating on this record.
I don't know, but I like out of 10, I'd probably give this like maybe an 8.5.
What do you think's wrong with it?
What I think's wrong with it? I don't not necessarily much. I mean,
yeah, that's the
it just kind of weirds me out. It's not, it's just kind of weirds me out because I feel like a lot of the reasons why I like this album so much is because I have a bias towards this type of songwriting.
That's totally fine.
Considering I'm wearing a Pinkerton shirt right now.
Literally right this moment. No, I get it. No, I gotcha.
Yeah, I'd give it like an 8.5. Maybe like a 9 if I'm like really sad.
I feel that. I have my own sad albums. The Glow Part 2. That's my sad
specifically,
album.
Specifically, I have 3 sad albums. Thank you very much. They're all for differing levels, too.
No, I get that. No, I get that.
That was a joke, by the way.
Pretty good album, just overall.
Oh, wait. That was a joke?
That was a joke.
You guys got to let me know.
I was kidding.
We're going to have to get a hand signal for when you guys tell jokes.
I was kidding. A hand signal.
Dude, I'm all serious over here, dude. There's friends dying. There's drug addiction. There's a lot going on over here, man. It's hard for me to come out of that with a smile. I mean, I was wondering if the poor guy killed himself by the time I got to song 4.
Dude, I mean, after Poison Oak.
It's like, oh.
It's like, woof, buddy. Goodness.
I know you're down, man, but bro. Wow.
That's how people work through it, though. You know what I mean?
And that.
Dude, it is. It is. Dude, you want to hear, can I just say something crazy that popped into my head when I was talking about it? Okay, there was this big, like, controversy over, we've all heard of WandaVision.
Yeah.
Okay, did you hear what Vision said and people got, like, tripped out on both sides of it?
What, the grief is love persevering line?
Dude, how great a line is that?
It's like the most raw line I've ever heard. I can't believe it came from that show.
A Marvel show, Vision says it.
Grief is, it's really, it's
what so is grief if not love persevering?
It's so sweet.
Dude, it is so the greatest sweet line ever. And it underlines what you've tried to, like, every time you've ever been with somebody or that has lost somebody they love. The whole point of what you're trying to accomplish with them in that conversation is allowing them to realize the more pain they're feeling is the more love they had.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's such a horrible conversation to have, you know?
But a necessary one.
But sure, Ray, tell a joke.
I don't know what I could rate this album out of 10. I kept thinking about it for a while on what I would possibly rate it. And it's just like some parts just don't hit with me and some parts do. So I literally don't know where to put it.
I think I would give it a 7.
It would probably be in that range.
Out of 10. But I also am totally open to anyone that thinks it's the greatest thing they've ever played.
Oh, there are certain aspects of this album where it hits me perfect. And it's just like,
It's just personal preference. There's a whole bunch of stuff I like better. But you know what I mean? But that's not their fault. Yeah. This is really it's really really good. Well, and the storytelling is perfect.
In this vein, Phoebe Bridgers, who worked with Conor Oberst, is that she just hits more with me for whatever reason.
I think what's unfair too in a rating system is that I have rated things that I just absolutely loved and thought were close to perfect 8s. So now I'm kind of pinned up because if
it's like, wait.
I think it's really, really good, but it's just not my thing. I don't know that I can put it on the same level as something that was absolutely my thing and I gave an 8. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying, where it's like, how can I... It's a logarithmic. It's not like... The scale just goes up wildly.
Wait, can we just reboot the scale system?
I mean, that's always the issue you see with people who do have, like, ratings systems, mm-hmm. whether that be an Anthony Fantano or whether that be a Dave Meltzer.
It eventually gets
to a point where it's weird.
But the point of a rating system,
right? And that's why we don't rate modern albums out of 10.
Yeah, because
that's a landmine.
But it's like, ugh.
Well, and like, okay, here's the thing though about ratings is people wonder, well, why do they do top 20 football ratings before the end of the year or whatever, right? And it's simple. Why do they do preseason top 20s? Why do they do that? It's to give people something to talk about.
Straight up.
It's a top 20 rating is a commercial. When Fantano does it, it's a commercial. And people who like music will argue about it. And then somebody will be sitting there and going, well, I don't even know who that is. Oh, well, let me tell you who that is. Next thing you know, he, in some bar, somewhere in the world, got a commercial for his product because he rated things by number rather than... Because then if he didn't, then it wouldn't be the kind of thing where, you know, that guy rated that a 6. Oh my God, he rated it a 10. They would have just listened and heard it and moved on with their day, right? But because you put a number on it, it gave you something to argue about. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Also, Fantano, I will
never say never.
I will never forgive you for putting Random Access Memories in B tier on your Daft Punk tier listing video.
Absolute dog water. What? that was one of the things I listened to this week on repeat was Random Access Memories. Touch is one of the best songs ever made.
Yeah.
Facts.
B-tier.
B-tier, bruh. All right, so we're going to talk about what we listened to this week?
Yeah.
What we listened to this week, fellas?
I listened to a lot of Random Access Memories because it's a phenomenal album, and I'm still a little sad. I also listened to some Remain in Light again, just because, holy God, Remain in Light. I have such a deep appreciation for The Great Curve. I love that song. I love that song. So I peeped that. I peeped a little bit of ELO.
Electric Light Orchestra?
Yes. Their 1981 album, Time. I guess it's a concept album. I just listened to the first couple songs. Twilight? How have I never heard about that song? It's like the song.
Yeah. Twilight's incredible.
It's off the chain, and it's like, wait, how is this not the ELO song?
The phone call at the beginning?
Dude.
It's so Jeff Lynne is a master.
There is nothing in between. Then the Twilight. Yeah. Oh my God, it's great.
How is that not good?
The ELO song.
Well, because they put Mr. Blue Sky in Guardians of the Galaxy.
You're right. You're right.
And Baby Groot danced to it, therefore it became their song.
Absolutely. That makes total sense. Then I also listened to the new King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard album, LW. It's part 3 of their albums that are microtonal in nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the style I associate with the most now. It's really good. It's not... Okay, well, I say it's really good. It has really good parts, but overall, I get a little bit used to it. Now that they're 3 albums in on the microtonal, it doesn't sound like super significantly different from KG, the album they dropped 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, if not now, then when. Great song. Static Electricity is absolutely off the chain.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. And the last song, KGLW, is just phenomenal.
Right.
It really has some really high spots on that album.
Absolutely.
But again, as a whole, I get a little bit... nearing the end, I'm just like, oh man, I gotta get to KGLW.
Yeah.
That's what I gotta get to. Yeah, so that's what I've been listening to. Again, I think King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard might be like one of my favorite bands. I've just enjoyed their music so much recently.
Right.
And right. Just a wide array of it. It's so baffling. It's so cool.
Right. A couple of people came into the place that I work, and he's a guitarist in a band that winds up opening for some band sometimes down at the Vinyl. And he's a huge King Gizzard. Like, he was like, my kid turned me on it, and it's crazy. It's just everything's so different. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah.
Every album. Yeah. And again, it's like, if you just go through their discography, like, Eyes Like the Sky is so unique and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Nonagon Infinity is just off the chain. Quarter's so cool. Each thing is so interesting and different.
Right.
The output's so crazy, man. Right. How can I not be a fan of a band that's actually going to put out music?
All the time.
Like, God, Friendship Ended if you don't with like Frank Ocean.
If you don't like what they just put out,
too bad.
Give it a month.
Wait 5 months, and yes, you got another album.
They'll be popping you with another one. Ray, what'd you listen to?
This was actually... but something brought me onto it. I don't remember who he was, but a YouTuber did a video on Lady Gaga. Oh, and the dog thing that happened.
That's still the wildest thing in the entire world to me.
Someone just stole her dog.
Who shoots a dog walker and takes the dogs?
Dude, that's out there. The weird things you've ever heard, that's out there. You know, Planet Zero, whatever. You were gonna say, Ray?
So I listened to her first album, The Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, as I'm pulling it up right now.
Don't sleep on Gaga.
Mega talented.
Yeah.
My dad was not a fan of her for a long time before she did. Julie Andrews is who we were talking about. I don't know why. I guess I got Sound of Music confused with Gone with the Wind because they're both.
It's okay. I deleted all that, so nobody knows.
Oh, perfect! I look like Julie Andrews. Forget everything I said. Julie Andrews is who I'm talking about. Lady Gaga did a performance, like a medley performance of The Sound of Music in like 2015 or something that like completely changed a lot of people's opinions on her.
Because
mm-hmm. Before that, most people knew her as her most famous stunt of wearing a meat dress.
Which is awesome.
Really gross. Or awesome, depending if you're like a bear.
Yeah.
It'd be great for a bear, but...
Should what we talk about?
He was talking about the album.
It's like it was her first album, The Fame. The opening, as I was listening to it, the opening four-song run of Just Dance, Love Game, Paparazzi, Poker Face, kind I was crazy. Like, I know all of those songs. And one of these songs I really shouldn't have known.
Which one was that?
Love Game.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It's like, wow. I did not know that I knew four songs word from word. Straight up. I also remember Paparazzi being slightly more energetic, but Paparazzi is still probably my favorite song on the album.
It's a good song, yeah. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Now that I play it back in my head, it's a little lower tempo than I remember. Good album, though.
Yeah, I was just kind of blown away. It's a little dated, but yeah. Other than that...
Pop music is usually the quickest type of music to get dated, unless you make, like, rap metal nowadays.
What?
I don't think anybody is, though.
Rap metal.
Run the Jewels.
That, it's closer than it is not, I guess. But
other than that.
KP.
Oh, what I listen to?
Yeah, you're a pop head now?
Let's see. I listen to... The reissues coming of The Roots, Do You Want More, In Your Dream Kids, I'm Every MC. They literally have every MC on there. It's like Q-Tip and Busta and, dude, it's great, like half of the Wu-Tang Clan. It's wild. And then I listen to, because I'm a pop guy now, right?
Yes.
And new music came out, so it hit me with new music on my drive home. Life's a Mess 2 from... Juice WRLD, I may or may not have gotten that correct.
Yeah, it's Juice WRLD.
With Cleaver and Post Malone.
Yeah, it was a posthumous release. I don't know. I haven't heard it.
You ready? Hold On from Justin Bieber.
What were your feelings on that?
It was good, but it was not as good as the return of Bruno Mars, son.
Bruno is like a generational talent, but I still have yet to see him do something that's like...
Dude, watch the video of Leave the Door Open. It's a band around him. He's playing keyboards, got a mustache. Anderson .Paak's on drums. Anderson .Paak is the first like little part of it, and then they slide into some other. Dude, it is so hot, dude.
See, that's, I don't know, man.
Bruno would take a grenade for you, and yet you clown on him.
Oh, I hate that song.
Oh,
that
my God,
the worst. Dude. Why is the first song that shows up when you look him up on Spotify, When I Was Your Man? That song is...
but the thing is, like...
Bruno feels love deeply.
Uptown Funk...
is great.
Incredible. It is the song of a generation.
Sure.
That's what I like. Just want him to put, like, a whole album out like right. that, rather right. than just doing, like, a weird...
Who works with him on Uptown Funk?
Mark Ronson.
Okay. He should go in the studio with Ronson and Anderson .Paak and come out with 12 songs.
And just make the most unfathomably good music
ever created.
Ever.
The world has ever seen. Yeah, because that would happen, right? I mean, you couldn't lock those dudes up for a month and not have it.
Yeah.
I just feel
like he's chomping on other flavors that aren't unique to him.
I think it's hard. I think when some people are so uber talented like that, that they can't, like if they could just dial into one. Like you saw it with Prince is a weird example. I always go back to him on stuff, but he would be fascinated with different aspects, and so then next thing you know, he would go through this whole period of one thing and another thing and another thing, and you get that with a lot of different artists that are uber skilled. It's like, well, Gaga jumps all over the place because she can absolutely do it. You'll see her on stage with Metallica, you'll see her on stage with who, it doesn't matter. Like, well, I saw her go in there and dress up like a guy and do a whole set playing piano like a guy. And it was fantastic.
Gaga's already kind of, well, Gaga's proved herself. Like, one of her first impressions was that, was her admitting that she was bisexual in 2008.
Dude, that's like, that's before the curve, straight up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that was.
Oh, dude, she does not. There are no given with her.
No.
Whatever she's thinking, whatever she wants to say, it gets fired out there. And, okay, good for her. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she built a career off of it. And also being mega talented.
And honestly, but again, too.
People knew Gaga for Paparazzi, mm-hmm. for
poker the face.
Meat dress, for Poker Face. That's what people knew her as for, like,
And I did also dive into the She's Got a music from the TV show on Netflix, She's Got a Habit, which is a Spike Lee. Yes, but the movie She's Got a Habit was years ago, and he kind of rebooted it into a series on Netflix. So the first season is basically the retelling of what is his version of you're judging women in their sex lives and relationship lives completely different than you are men. So he does a movie around a woman that's having relationship with three different men and how almost pathetic it is the way you perceive that compared to what it should be perceived if you're going to perceive the man in a certain way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's like a nine, there's like nine episodes that tell that tale. And then the second season is more about her dealing with her artwork and how making money or staying in the art, and also her community is being in Brooklyn, is, has gone through gentrification, and to some degrees that's a macro and micro version of the same problem you have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And so that's kind of neat. But the cool thing about the movie is every scene has a song behind it, or the TV show. Every scene has a song behind it. And when the scene is over, the album that that song is on is like a second. You see just the album. Album goes away, new scene.
Okay.
Right? And so it's really very music-centric, right? And there's Stevie Wonder, and then there's Coltrane, and there's Erykah Badu, and it just, it, there's a whole episode. He throws a party in Brooklyn every year that's a Prince party. And so there's a whole episode that's just Prince music. Then there, then
we should all be doing that, TBH.
And then the next episode is filmed in Puerto Rico. And so that's all that style of rhythms, you know, island rhythms and all that. So it's very cool. It's very cool. And so the soundtrack's cool. You can just kind of roll through it.
Okay, all this talk about Gaga has got me thinking about one of my favorite Kanye quotes.
There's a bunch of them.
Oh my God, this was in an interview. He said, "Cause look at Gaga. She's one of the creative directors of Polaroid. I like some of the Gaga songs. What the heck does she know about cameras?"
It's true, though. You know what I mean?
I get it.
Oh, God. Anything else? Which ones do you listen to? I see some LW there.
I did listen to that. I also listened to, did I say Three Snakes and a Charm?
No, not yet.
By Your Side. I listened to both those albums, the Black Crowes albums that I got him when I started listening to the box that I'm getting soon. I just started diving into the discography enough, and it's so good. Oh, piggybacking though on what you were saying about Jeff Lynne, think about this. The Traveling Wilburys, mm-hmm. Bob Dylan, Tom Petty, George Harrison, who else is in that group?
It's like a crazy super group.
Petty, Dylan, Roy Orbison, Jeff Lynne. Okay. People were like, "Well, who's that guy?" When they look at them, the video where they're on the inside the train box,
yeah,
and it's like, dude, that's, you know, who doesn't wonder who that guy is? The other four Hall of Famers.
That's who.
Can we piggyback on something I said a couple of weeks ago that I was laughed about?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, my Ringo Starr statement. You ready?
What did you say about Ringo Starr?
Remember, I said it was Ringo's band.
Oh, yeah, Ringo's band, baby.
Ringo's band. And this guy said something about, I don't understand the Ringo hate that goes out. And Steven Van Zandt from the Steven's Little Underground Garage Station said, the people who, basically talking about the people who don't like Ringo, only by the most ignorant people. He was not only a great drummer, he was considered one of the best drummers in a town full of bands. He was a bigger star than they were at the time, and they were lucky to get him. You don't hear that part about Ringo. Don't shun me because it's Ringo's band.
Straight up.
We're all living in a yellow submarine, guys.
I would like to be in an octopus's garden. I was going to make like an octopus's garden reference, but I didn't.
It was going to be funny, but you killed it.
Yeah, I... Yeah. I am part of...
That's all we do.
Don't
make funny jokes.
Don't make fun of me killing your jokes if you're beating me to it.
Straight up. Yeah. Was that a rap? The one last thing, I listened to Thank You Scientists Terraformer. It's an hour and 24 minutes long. It's prog metal.
Nice.
Yeah, it's kind of good.
Oh, yeah, it's made for me, baby.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
It's good. Came out in 2019. It's good.
Shout out to the Gin Project.
Shout out to the Gin Project and the other thing. What are we doing next week?
Oh, Revolver Records on 12th Avenue. Shout out to Revolver Records on 12th Avenue.
Yeah.
What are we doing next week? The Stooges?
No.
We're not doing the Stooges? Iggy Pop and the Stooges?
Doing Parliament, baby.
Parliament Funkadelic? Isley Brothers.
Let's do Maggot Brain.
We're doing Maggot Brain next week?
I kind of want to do Maggot Brain.
Do you want to do Maggot Brain next week?
Let's save some of the other stuff for later, because I feel more going further down this road of kind of emo adjacent 2000s rock, this time being more rock music. We are doing the Say Anything album, Is a Real Boy.
I love soundtracks.
Pinocchio, baby.
Dude, John Cusack on top of that car. That's not it. Say Anything, the movie. Oh. My bad, guys.
I didn't get that. We kill our own jokes here.
We only make timely references.
The masses are laughing, first of all.
The masses.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take your word for it.
So we're doing what?
We're doing Say Anything's Is a Real Boy for Classics Week next week. It is... Say Anything is a pop-punk band frontline by lead singer Max Bemis. Thank you to the Gin Project. Thank you to Revolver Records.
Thank you to
this
Jared.
This has been Raise Music Reviews. Jared.
You're welcome.
That's a new album.
KP.
And me, of course, the titular Ray, signing off. Go home. Copyright 2021.